Welcome to this special edition of STP Radio, the STP Con Spring 2015 Keynote Series. Let's listen in to Mark Tomlinson, performagician at West Evergreen Consulting, deliver his afternoon keynote address, It's Non-Functional, Not Dysfunctional, recorded on April 1st, 2015.
All right. Hello. So seeing as I'm the only thing between you and a reception that involves beer, it seems I should kick off a keynote with a joke that starts with that phrase, someone walks into a bar. And you've guys seen the ones recently that are like a tester walks into a bar and they order one drink, two drink, three drink, 99 drinks, 100 drinks, one. No. So this, on the quarter of this topic, will be a functional tester walks into a bar and sees a performance tester and a security tester sitting there having a drink, and she thinks to herself, oh, strike up a conversation, that'll be nice. And turns to the performance tester and says, so, hey, performance tester, what's up? Performance tester puts down his whiskey and says, well, response times are up, throughput is up. But that's not the half of it. Power and cooling prices are going up, and now they want to put everything up into the cloud. So everything's going up in the internet. I don't know what to do. She's like, whoa, too much information there, buddy. And so she says, all right, well, how about you? What's up with you, security tester? And he says, firewalls and my resume. Okay, that's a check one for the joke on the bar. Yes. If you don't know any security testers, go ask them how many jobs they have every 6 months. It'll be like, yeah, you'll get it. But I want to talk today on the subject of non-functional versus functional, and really the whole idea as to why we came up with this delineation in the first place. Because it really irks me to some extent that I find people that are like, well, I don't really understand non-functional. And my whole career thus far has been helping people understand how to glue the pieces back together around non-functional. So how did we get to a point where somebody says, you know what, I don't have the skills, maybe, the same as the non-functional guys. Like, I do functional testing, but I don't know what the non-functional guys, those security guys, performance guys, it's a different set of skills, maybe, right? We don't learn the same skills. But how do we get there, right? Maybe it's a different set of resources. So if you're testing in functional testing, you have, oh, we can get away with, like, I've just got my laptop. Maybe a mobile tester just has a mobile device and they do their testing on the device. But those performance guys or the security guys, they have a whole lab they build out. There's all these extra resources and tools and all these expenses. So those non-functional guys are very different. It takes a whole different set of knowledge and resources and tools to support that. So that's why we're different. The other thing would be if you go back a few years in the waterfall world, maybe it was timing. The developers would develop the code, then they would hand it on to the next phase. Testers would do functional testing, system testing. And only after that was done, we would do the performance testing, if you were lucky, in a whole separate phase. Separate team at a separate time and a different schedule as we went our merry way every 18 months to production. So maybe it's just the timing that was different that led us into this belief that non-functional and functional needed to be separate. And the only true conclusion I can come to on this is that it's dysfunctional. At this point in life, in our careers, in our industry, separating functional and non-functional is now absolutely dysfunctional. And I hope to share some of my ideas as to why. Now, first and foremost, let's look at the changes that have happened around these three areas, around skills, around resources, and around timing for doing our testing. And the first thing I would look at with skills and resource is what's changed with skills. How many of you, during this event, as a tester, a functional tester, are learning automation? One, two, three, a lot of people are learning automation. How many of you know automation, you're going to the next level with automation? It's already part of your job, right? Functional testers are learning automation. Great, that's marvelous, we like that. So the idea that functional testers don't know tools. Performance testers, how many performance testers do you do manual performance testing with your 10,000 friends on the load test site? I got my 10,000 friends. Let's get together and do a load test. Maybe on LinkedIn you might have 10,000 friends, but not, you know, how do you coordinate them? How do you repeat the test? You just can't do it. There's not enough pizza in the world to get that many people to do a load test. So performance testers, and even security testers, you look at the tooling and automation within security testing, the skills to all the non-functional people have been using these tools for a very long time. So now we've got SDETs, or software engineers in test, that know, are learning these tools, and nowadays, just being functional, non-automated in your testing is unacceptable. You just wouldn't do it. So the skills have changed pretty dramatically. Now, if we talk about the resources, well, what's changed in the resources? How many of you have a dedicated lab somewhere, a huge room that is just running all of your test lab machines, and it's a full-time investment? One, two, not that many, right? Because the resources to build this stuff are moved into the cloud, and they're becoming on demand. And you may even do testing in production, right? So if we move to testing in production, then the resources are totally different. You might actually take a technique. You don't even have a lab. So this idea that I do functional testing over here, and I have all these huge resources and tooling and monitoring and all this stuff is a separate investment to keep things apart is disappearing. The same tools, if you're testing in production to monitor the site in production, you're actually using during your load testing. Okay? So maybe the resources are no longer that separate, but definitely the changes around timing, that's a huge change. Continuous, we went from waterfall to agile, agile into continuousness-nessity, right? So we're totally continuousness-ness. But the idea that there's a separate team at the end of experts that do that stuff, well, every customer I've talked to in the last couple of years have been, how do I get performance shifting left upstream? How do we get earlier performance testing practices in the minds of developers? I asked today in my class on ROI performance how many people called themselves a performance engineer. All the hands went up. Well, not all the hands, but most of the hands went up. We don't call ourselves performance testers because we're shifting left. We want to influence in the engineering stages, not just validation of load testing after the fact. So the timing has now changed as well. So if the skills are morphing because we're learning more automation and learning more programming in test, and we're learning that the resources are really a contiguous set of resources that we can do testing in any of these environments, that doesn't keep us apart. And the timing is now bringing us together across the entire life cycle continuously. We're definitely dysfunction. We've lost our reason to be separated from functional and non-functional. And that means we need to embrace the fact that if we're a separate team of functional testers in Agile and a separate firefighting team of performance testers in a separate group, and then there's the secret security tester. Any security testers in the room? We gotta find, see, they're secret. They're not here. And if they were here, they couldn't tell you that they were here. They'd have to kill you, right? So this secret little society of security people that are doing testing, but you don't know they're doing testing, and they log their bugs in a different system or something like that, it's crazy, right? The idea that we're separate is no longer an actual functional thing. So my point is that separation is futile, and here's why. The performance and functionality, and some of you may have heard me say this. By the way, it's a good Star Trek plug, right? If you're into the Borg, you got to have Star Trek in your presentation. And if you can, get Doctor Who or kittens. Those are great criteria. Performance and functionality are linked, and this is what I keep seeing. Whether it's from increased latency due to mobile application running across the live internet and Wi-Fi, or if it's a third-party exception from another remote, a timeout exception, or whether it's a slow database query, rich UI interactions are getting functionally broken due to performance conditions. So you may today actually be passing a load test, or passing a functional test, where you haven't considered the conditions of the real world, and you give a thumbs up, we're good to go, and that bug won't happen. The minute you put that app out in the real world with latencies and congestion and concurrency, suddenly it doesn't render the same. Suddenly the timing of the asynchronous JavaScript calls doesn't work. Suddenly the mobile device switches from LTE to 4G or between LTE and Wi-Fi, and it disrupts the connection flow. So you may be giving false negatives in your test. You might be giving false positives. You might get a functional test that says, hey, there's some issues here in my scaled-down little QA environment, and this functionality is not doing right. Okay, I've got some latencies here, and something's broken. And your ops guys come back and say, that's not a bug. In production, we have 10 times the network bandwidth. We have 10 times the cloud scale out. We have 10 times the data throughput. We don't have those resource constraints that you do in QA. And it's a shame because that's a false positive. And there's nothing worse to undermine your testing credibility than having false results within your testing. So performance is the biggest violator. Security, your non-functional friends, are the next. So I think security and functionality are linked, maybe not as directly in your test for functionality, but those vulnerabilities, in one way, shape, or form, are sort of hidden inside the application code or in the infrastructure behind the application code. So even though the separate secret security guys that are doing that testing and pen testing, you'll never hear from them. Otherwise, one day you just don't show up to work and we don't ask. The idea is you're passing tests functionally on data fields that could have the vulnerability sitting right beneath them. SQL injection is nothing more than taking those simple injection strings, throwing them into a field, and trying to submit and commit those field changes. Web service at the same time, you can inject them in web service fields, right? So the vulnerabilities are there. The bugs around non-functional security are right there while you're doing a functional test. And if that's the only thing that your manager sees, you give a thumbs up on functionality, guess what? Those vulnerabilities could be solved right there. And my point is, be more aware of your non-functional aspects and conditions so that we can get more credibility into the functional testing that we do. So separation is futile. I want to take some time as we acknowledge the dysfunction in our relationship. We can embrace one another. So if you will, any of the performance testers that are here, and the security testers aren't here, turn at your table and say hello to somebody who's a functional tester. Just right now, turn it high. Are you a functional tester? Eric's a performance tester, so say hello there. Just take a second to maybe reach out, shake a hand, and say, hello, friend. Right? Hello, friend. It's okay. We know each other. Our resources are not that different. Our skills are not that different. And guess what? We're having to test together at the same time, right? So we're all going to be friends. By the end of this, we're going to be in a big group hug, and then we're going to go talk to the reception, right? So let's review the evidence of some of this dysfunction so we can together go through some group therapy and maybe overcome this, right? Now, the first thing I want to talk about is dysfunction number one. And your performance guys will say this all the time. Unless the code is stable, I can't test the performance. Have you said it before, performance guys? Don't be ashamed. Thank you for admitting it, Eric. I've said it myself. You know, and I thought I was really doing a good service to my team by pushing back and refusing. And the one word I hate in this, what do you think it is? Can't. It's that I won't. Nowadays, we have some innovations that help you, right? If I define explicitly what I mean by stable, what is it? Is it the infrastructure that's unstable? Is it the network that's unstable? Configuration of the app layer? Is it the app itself, the code? Because I hate it when I push back and the developer comes in and says, hey, there's nothing wrong with my code. You didn't configure your network right. What are you, an idiot about networks? And all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I look bad. And that's bad for us as testers together, right? What would it take to make the code stable? Well, just change the number of threads from the default in the test lab if I didn't know that, right? Number of connections in the connection pool. It may have nothing to do with the code. It's a whole system kind of thing. The other key piece that you'll see showing up here is that there's this great innovation that we used to build ourselves called stubs, stubbing virtualization, service virtualization, simulators is another word. Could you virtualize the 10% of the code that was unstable and still get some meaningful learning on performance at the same time on the 90% that works? Yes, don't say you can't. Yeah, we could if you have some matured solutions around how you do virtualization. Another good question here is ask yourself, boy, if it's not stable today, will it ever be stable? In a release cycle that takes 18 months, you might say, well, somewhere in the 2 months of test window that I have, because I live in 1983, I have plenty of time to wait for it to become stable. When your release cycle is maybe every day, every other day, you're going to be constantly encountering instability because of the rate of release and the rate of change. So we need to adapt. We need to turn to our friends in the functional team and say, you guys get nightly builds in QA all the time. You encounter instability all the time. How do you deal with it? And they say, oh, I talked to the developer and they gave me this little stub and we just turn it on and turn it off. And like, you guys can do that? That's awesome, right? So if you're not doing it in performance, you can learn from developers and functional. Chances are, even if they don't call it simulators, you got to buy a beer, take them out, and say, hey, do you have these little stub things? Yeah, dude, here, no problem. Don't tell anyone. Go ahead and use it. Especially don't tell the security guys because you'll be in trouble. So unless the code is stable, I can't test the performance. We're done with that. No longer. We can test some performance. Maybe not the superset of all things, but we can get some performance learning from what is stable. Dysfunction number two. As the project manager, I have allocated 2 weeks at the end of project for load testing. Who's done it? Who's just arbitrarily thrown 2 weeks? Thank you for admitting it. It's good, right? It's good to be honest. Just get it out. Just clear the air, right? 2 weeks. Yes, it could have done to you. That great question. How many of you have been stuck with this? Yes? Just arbitrary, hey, 2 weeks to test. You guys should be fine, right? Very good. Thank you. It results from limited experience and training on the part of the PM. If you ever meet a PM that's been burned on performance, the next time they do a project, I'm giving you maybe 4 weeks. Still arbitrary, but it's better than 2 weeks. Great. The real thing here is that the performance team is not involved up front. Again, we're separated. We're not supporting you. And hey, functional testing team, you have a relationship with the developers and the PMs. Help me get up front and start talking about what it'll take. You might surprise them where they say, we're going to allocate 2 weeks for testing. And you look at the change and you go, you know what? We got everything. We could just do 1 day worth of a run. You'll be good to go. And they're like, holy cow, I could save 9 working days. So you may surprise them. But if we never work together, then we suffer this dysfunction. Service virtualization is a good strategy here, because I have to wait till the end for 2 weeks instead of doing some performance testing of components along the way. So yeah, hey, show up and say, why don't we run a little bit of load? Take your unit tests, take your component tests, and start running some load early. The project manager says, woo, we're getting numbers and feedback early. That's great, right? No reason we shouldn't do that. I also see this in customers where they have development is agile or they have continuous, but the release is still a big monthly heavy release at the end of the cycle. So the perception on the PM is that, oh, I'll just do my integrated performance testing or integrated testing when all the pieces are ready. We can break that myth, break that practice. Dysfunction number three. The functional testers don't know how to use the tools for performance and security. Are there any functional testers in here right now that don't know how to use tools for performance and security? Okay, so my real question is your company unwilling to invest in you? In your learning. You're here at STPCon. They're willing to invest. We have tracks for performance. We have tracks for security, but we can't tell anyone about them because then they'll be killed. So we can't go there. But so that's the biggest thing, is there's no reason that functional testers, if you guys are going to automation classes and learning how to code, learning that same automation techniques is applicable to using performance tools and security tools. The same interactive types of synchronization and sort of macro automation applies. So there's no reason we wouldn't invite you. Sauce Labs, one of the sponsors, they do huge things in the cloud doing functional testing, regression suites. You know what? You can use those same functional automation tools to generate some load or combine them with larger load tests. It's a beautiful thing. Another thing I see happening is that automation gets stuck in a silo. Well, we bought UFT, and that's the tool for functional testing, and that's all it will do. And so the guys that are doing functional test automation, they will go over here, and they will use only that tool. Well, can't I use UFT together with LoadRunner in my load test environment? Yeah, you bet I can. I've been able to do that for almost 20 years. And the idea is that I combine functional and load testing. So don't let your automation get stuck in a silo, because you could take start timer, end timer within UFT and start getting response times or duration times right out of your functional testing tool. It's a beautiful thing. I can start learning about performance from my functional automation. Do it together. It's hard if you have heterogeneous tools across the lifecycle. It's also interesting when your outsourced talent turns out to lack talent. And that's because someone's not investing in them. We're going to take a bite off more than a true. I mentor a lot of people around the world that say, I just got thrown into a performance test. I don't know how to use the tool. Can you help me? And I help them get started with the basics of what to do, right? How to use JMeter or how to use cloud test, right? Get them started with that stuff. Because again, somebody needs to invest in a functional tester and learn these other pieces. Dysfunctional number four, we don't have the same security configuration in tests that we do in prod. Is that true? You guys have your QA environment is very different from prod. It's definitely in performance we see this, so we definitely see it. The QA environment, the test environment, is configured closer to development than it is to operations. Because you know what? We missed the requirement to even ask for it. Hey, if you want me to validate that the functionality is good, set up the same security, set up the same firewall, set up the same identity server, set up the same group policies that we're going to use in production, in test, because if I'm going to say pass, I want to say pass to something that's as close to the real world. It's not an absolute instruction. You may do some test cycles that are closer to dev, but don't forget to do test cycles that validate closer to production. We may have to do both. So I think there's a missed requirement within functionality, functional testing, to say the test environment should look that way. The vulnerabilities for security are still in the code. You just haven't found them, or you haven't set up the test conditions to be able to find them. Your secure, the brothers and sisters, the, your stepbrothers and sisters in security, pull them out of the closet and say, come help us get the environment configured right so that we can, when we validate the functionality, it actually looks like security and production. You could be missing pen tests. One of the things I've seen with automation is taking the same things you would see in the old inspect products or some of the automated security dynamic penetration tests. Pull some of those strings out and actually put them in the automated suite in your automation tests. You can actually start just putting the strings in at the end of fields and seeing, ooh, what happens? Boom, it blows up. Okay? So look at actually bringing that automation directly into your functional testing. And then, of course, the biggest excuse that causes this dysfunction is there's that security team over there. That's not me. Someone else does this. And that's what a lot of your leaders... Oh, you just stay focused on functionality. There's a special team of experts to do that. And that special teams of experts... Well, the last one got fired last month, and we hired a new firm to do that, and then they're going to be gone after the next vulnerability, so they don't know the app as much as you do because you've been here for 2 years. So really, the security team has a lot to learn from you, and you could help them, bring them in to help yourself, exactly. So make a trade. Dysfunction number five, this is a good one. Our test environment is shared with other environments and hosted on over-provisioned virtual server host. Who's got it? Who's yes? Thank you. Greg? Yes? Very good. Okay? Performance testers, we hate this because we're trying to take performance measurements in some absolute way or compare run over run over run in the trend. And if the numbers are so variable because it's just a crazy shared environment, the performance measurements actually lack value because it doesn't really mean much. We can't even tell a trend. So if you've had a person from VMware or Microsoft come along and tell you, look at this great consolidation effort that we're going to do. Look at this great virtualization. We're going to take all this excess capacity and smush it all into one machine without really knowing that it's going to impact the measurements you take in performance. And actually, now we know performance impacts functionality, so it's actually going to impact your functionality tests. The minute you run a test run, something's chewing the CPU on the VM host that makes your test run slower, and you start failing tests incorrectly or falsely. So this overzealous cost-cutting around consolidation and virtualization is good, or licensing. Oh, well, we can't afford another Informatica server. We can't afford another database. We can't afford So you know what? That's got excess capacity. I'll just put the performance guys on the same database with the functional testing instances. So when I run a load test, all your functional tests fail. Well, that's completely dysfunctional. How come I'm not calling you up and saying, hey, you know, Andy, when are you going to run your automation test? You know, I'm going to run them between usually kicks off around 1 a.m. Great. When are they done? 2 a.m. Great, I'll start my performance tests like from 3 to 5 or 3 to 7. You know, we'll work out, we'll share. We can get along, Andy. We can make it right. We can do better. It's also a common symptom for understaffed teams. So if you really have a tech ops team that's just like, I don't have time to set up another machine, set up another environment. I'm just going to put you on the existing infrastructure, share it all together. You know, it's just the best I can do given the fact that I have 400 Jira tickets over my head. Right? Another great thing that helps you out of this is service virtualization. So if you haven't figured, hey, if we have to share this component, when I'm running these tests, I'll use a virtual simulated stub, and you can use the real thing. And then tomorrow, we'll switch it. I'll use the real service, and you use the stub. So we can cooperate. That's not dysfunctional. We're friends. We're together. We can share our resources. Okay? The last dysfunction, number six, we do not have defined SLAs or non-functional requirements specification. Who has SLAs? Good for you guys. No one else has SLAs? Anyone in functional testing have SLAs defined for your functional tests? It doesn't even make sense to do that. But I would love to know, even if one session is running, if one session blows out the SLAs, we probably have a big problem trying to get to multiple people's within the SLA, right? But oftentimes, it's completely missing. You don't have a product owner that knows, hey, we should put some response time and volume criteria right in here because we're competing on performance and really getting more explicit about what we assume is going to happen for response time and volume. So performance, all those non-functional conditions should become part of our functional spec. So we have limited input from the business. Even if our product owner knows how to write response times and things within that's user story, they go to the business and say, well, should it be 3 seconds, 2 seconds, 5 seconds? I don't know. If you get an I don't know in testing, are you guys good with computers? Are you? Curtis is good with you guys? You guys know how to use computers, right? Great. Would common sense help here? Like, okay, the response time for this e-commerce site should be less than 2 minutes. Like, that's crazy. Would you ever use a site that takes 2 minutes to respond? No. So, you know, to step up and say, look, the default value, we're just going to go with something like this, and I'm going to put an asterisk by it that says ask in every meeting, is this an acceptable number? Until somebody puts a stake in the sand and says, I'm glad you finally forced me to think about performance, not just functionality. And of course, the biggest dysfunction is, aren't there a bunch of expert performance guys that take care of all that? I don't need to think about it. The truth is, we suffer downstream with no requirements. We can't even provide value. We can't support you. So bring us in and we'll help define these things. Here's a good example of what a normal functional user story, a simple example, how easy this is. So that I can report to my management as a campaign manager, I want to see the results of my active campaign on the single web page. You're paired up with a developer. Developer says, great, I'm going to write the page. It's going to do a query. Going to pull back the active results for the campaign. And the tester says, great, I'll write a little functional automation. Going to get in there and actually validate that it populated the exact number of rows. Woo, we're good, done. And we can run that in the regression suite. Everything's going to be great. But what if we added this? So that campaign managers can report accurately and timely to their managers, as an operations manager, I want the data on the active campaign page to render in less than 2 seconds when 10,000 users are actively on the site. Would you do something different as a tester if that showed up in your inbox? Yeah. Would a developer do something different? They'd probably freak out. Oh, 10,000 active users. Oh my God. What am I going to do? And you know, in that panic mode where your developer and you are in the test, you're hanging on to each other, we're never going to get this story done. This is insane. Is there anyone you can turn to for help? You can call me. I'm a performance tester. I could tell you whether this is easy, whether we test this every day, no problem, or we can all freak out together, but at least we're together. It's amazing that this specification, which comes from the business, by the way, a product owner or somewhere as a requirement, the minute they put functional and non-functional together, we come together. We turn to each other. How will we test this? What resources do we need? What skills do I need? What timing will this, when will we do this test? Should we do it multiple times? All of those skills, resources, and timing, those problems go away. Just because the business thought to put it together in an integrated way, we can work together in an integrated way. And that's really the crux of my message about not being dysfunctional anymore, and healing the separation that is between us. Oops, I went the wrong way. There you go. So this is our future vision for one another. And let's see, the doctor would be the security guy, I think, because he's sort of that shifty, weird, you know, appears every now and then. I'm just kidding. So yes, we'll end up in a giant group hug between security, non-functional, performance and functional, and your PM and your business. And this is what your teams should look like from now on. Even with the soft focus lens, you know, it's a little bit romantic. It's very nice. And of course, in the end, in summary, that's my point. There's no reason to be separated anymore. There's things impacting your credibility as a functional tester or doing testing of any kind if you don't think about security and really think about performance being integrated into how you define your test and the conditions for your test. You have support from the people in this room. And the people in our community, there's wonderful forums out there. There are people that are now mentoring like crazy. So if you want to hook up with a mentor and get help doing this stuff, it's really important and it's totally possible. We have tools. So if you're talking to testing manufacturers, tool manufacturers, for years they have said, I've got functional automation, I have security automation, I have performance automation, I've got monitoring. They have whole suites. I'm not saying you have to go to a single platform for all your tooling, but just be aware you may find support from your existing vendors that will say, yeah, we can help you put the pieces together and start doing this all at once. And most importantly, I think you have a community. The same thing I'm saying around mentors. I mean, you have a community of people that are here to help you and tap into. Give us your feedback in the surveys. What kinds of workshops you want to dig into? If you want to see more integrated functional testing and performance in the same track, if you want to see us actually demonstrate this for you, let us know and we will do it. This community is great for helping each other. And that's my keynote. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of STP Radio. Join our mailing list and learn more about STP and future STPCon events at softwaretestprofessionals.com.